for the low. Welcome to lovely Las Vegas for Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Hoops Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. We've got an excellent podcast for you as we're going to be joined in segment number two by one of our good friends, Rob Donaldson, who does such great work with the show slash podcast, Rob's Best Bets. He's over there at Underdog Fantasy. We're going to be chatting with him about the, shall we say, lack of defense that we have been seeing here this college basketball season, how he's been making some adjustments to that. Additionally, we're going to be chatting with him about some of the teams that he's been looking to bet here in the early goings of the season. Then we're going to dive in on what is a pretty solid slate of college basketball on this Monday. And then in the final segment, going to get you guys picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this college basketball Monday as we hit some bank shots. If you do have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, you have one of two ways we offer those in. First one is my Twitter slash X timeline at GUnit underscore 81. Keep in mind, there's the naming does not matter. So as per usual, please send these into the timeline. And the other way is find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you're able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. Well, I did not get in any Twitter slash X questions today. Everything is powered by Better. That is BETR on Better. They're making it easier than ever before to get in on some daily fantasy because all you need to do is go to Better.app. That is BETR.app. And when you type in this promo code of VSIMPOD, VSIMPOD, that's going to get you $10 free. All you need to do is take a look at a player, pick whether or not they're going to be going over or under that stat, and boom, you are all good to go. And we're all good to go to take a look at what we got on a very entertaining slate of college basketball on Sunday. Try to find some trends and try to get to know these teams a little bit better.
What games from yesterday is Greg buzzing about? Here is the rowdy recap.
Houston got themselves a big giant scare against Auburn. They find a way to persevere, but 73-72 was the final. As for Houston, it looked like in the middle of the second half, they were going to be able to run and hide with this game as they were up 73-66 with just 2.5 minutes remaining. They were up pretty much throughout, about like 5 to 6 points. It felt like Auburn really never had too much of a lead, if any, in this game. But for Houston, it was Kingston Flemings that really bailed them out. He was able to lead the way with 22 points. And for Auburn, way that they stayed in this game, Keyshawn Hall, who looks like he's going to be in for a massive year this year, he supplies that team with 20 points, 11 rebounds. For Auburn, 7-22 from three. How about Houston? Just 7-24 from the outside. And Houston actually loses a turnover battle by kind of 10-8, but in the end for Houston, they went 10-12 at the free throw line, and you needed Auburn to be able to hit those free throws. 21 out of 33 at the charity stripe. That turned out to be very costly for them, but certainly a nice quality cover for all that had it there. If you're looking at some of the non-ranked teams that were in action, and there weren't too many ranked teams in action, you did have Appalachian State start off the day with an 85-77 win over Dartmouth. Dartmouth looks to be playing not a lot of defense right now. Alonzo Dowd, the Dodfather, 16 points, 6 points, 6 assists, so that was a nice quality win. And Kent State, for the first time all season, now below 85 points. They went to overtime with Wright State. This game was 62-62 going into overtime. Kent State coming off of a little bit of a rough back-to-back. They do find a way to persevere, though. 76-72, the final as for this Kent State team. They had a tough time holding on to the ball. They lost the turnover battle by a count of 18-11, but they get bailed out in this game by the fact that Jericho Gillespie, he had himself a heck of a day down low. 26 points, 17 rebounds. So they do find a way to be able to stave off the upset, and they do find a way to be able to persevere, get the job done out there. You did see Indiana get a big giant scare from Encarta Ward. It looked like they were going to be able to sign, seal, and deliver this game very easily. They were up 35-19 at the half, but the Ward hold in there. 69-61 the final. By the way, for Encarta Ward, out of the teams that had played against at least one Division I opponent entering into the day, they were dead last in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis, so defense was much better in this game for them. And for Encarta Ward, way that they were able to stay in this game, Taj Stavesky, he comes on over from Cleveland State. He was able to give this team a nice quality 17 points, and for Encarta Ward, they go 8-21 from 3, just 5-24 for Indiana, but Indiana did have Tucker DeVries be able to supply the team with 14 points, gave the team 5 rebounds, and off the bench, Sam Alexis, 16 points, 8 rebounds. That really willed the team the victory. Also being willed the victory was a Alabama A&M bunch that should be very intriguing this season. 74-65, the final. They are now under the tutelage of Dante Jackson, who is the coach over at Grambling. So we are noticing quite a few unders to begin the season with Alabama A&M. And the Fighting Mike Bibbies just barely get it done against Presbyterian. For Sacramento State, they were down 36-27 at the half. They do find a way to persevere. 64-62 as Jeremiah Cherry, the big man, man down low, he did provide a lot of big production. 17 points, 10 rebounds, pair of blocks as for Sacramento State need to clean up the turnovers. They lost that turnover battle by a count of 17-11. South Florida and Kennesaw State decided that defense was going to be very optional on Sunday. 108-89. South Florida absolutely laying base. Kennesaw State, as for the South Florida team, every one of the starters were able to score in double figures, with Joseph Pignon being the main headliner. He was able to supply 24 points for South Florida, 8 of 20 from 3-point, and 38 out of 46 at the free throw line. Kennesaw State just 25 of 39 at the free throw line, so lots and lots of fouls here. Simeon Cuttle was able to give Kennesaw State 24 rock solid points, but not enough to be able to get the cover there. And for Iowa State, they played a very low scoring slog against Notre Dame. Notre Dame led at the half. They do relinquish the lead late, but still a very solid effort as Ohio State, they win by a count of 64-63. For Iowa State, the reason why they got this win was Bruce Thornton going off. 8 of 15 from the floor, 4 of 7 from 3-point range. He was able to put in there a nice, cool 24 points. And with Notre Dame, they did go just 12 of 20 at the free throw line. That was very costly. Marcus Burton, top scorer, had 14 points, but just 3 of 14 from the floor. So needed a little bit more out of him. I'm doing this just as the Purdue versus Akron game is going final. I do have to have this up at midnight Pacific, 3 o'clock game Eastern. Currently, Purdue is up 95-70. The 20.5 point spread is a little bit of intrigue, but what is not of intrigue is really whether or not Purdue is going to be able to pull this one out and pull it out convincingly. As for Purdue, unless if he scores a little bit late, you're going to get Fletcher Lawyer and Braden Smith with 16 points apiece. Smith was able to throw in their 10 assists as well, and as I am doing this right now, it's Purdue doing a very rock solid job in terms of winning that battle on the glass, 43-23, as Oscar Clough, 14 rebounds, Trey Kaufman, Ren, 15 rebounds, and you've seen Daniel Jacobson, the 7'4" big man caught off the bench. He's been able to give the team some relatively good production as well, and it appears as though Cleveland State not going to be playing a lot of defense this year. They do get the job done against Radford, 87-82. Cleveland State has been playing some harebrained and just absolutely wild and insane games. For Cleveland State, they had 20 points out of Deion Nasai, and for Radford, under Zach Chu, well, they are looking to have the choo-choo train be able to deliver a little bit more offense. It's a bit less than efficient with regards to their shooting in this one. They shoot less than 40% from floor, so that's a bit costly for them, and UMass Lowell is looking like one of the most brutal teams in all of college basketball right now. 109-75. They get completely pasted by a Wake Forest team that entered in this one, not shooting well from three, and they allowed them to go 13 of 30 from 3-point range as Juke Harris, Javon Spillers both provide 21 points. Nate Calmezzi was able to give you 15 points, and for UMass Lowell, a team that's been pretty respectable out there in the America East in past seasons, they are not looking respectable at all right now. And for Oklahoma State, got a little bit of a test from Steve Lutz's old team at Texas A&M Corpus Christi. They get a solid cover against Oklahoma State, 85-69. The final in this one as for Oklahoma State, just 5 of 24 from 3-point range, but you did have a quartet of guys off the bench be able to give you double figures in Lefteris Mantzoukas, along with Andre Vucevic. You had Anthony Roy, who was over at UW Green Bay last season, was averaging like 26 points per game for them, 15 points, and Isaiah Coleman, he supplied 10. But for Texas A&M Corpus Christi, they do a nice job winning the turnover battle, 17-14, so nice quality cover there. And for Cincinnati, they looked better in the second half against Mount St. Mary's, but they're looking to crank up the tempo, and the offense is not looking great. 72-55, they do persevere against Mount St. Mary's, but nowhere close to covering the 25-point number. For Cincinnati, 6 of 29 from 3, 18 of 30 at the free throw line. They're doing a rock-solid job on defense. Mount St. Mary's in this game loses the turnover battle 19-10, but offense still a little bit of a work in progress. And with regards to trend-wise what we're seeing in college basketball, certainly the underdogs covering is a bit of a work in progress. Looking a little bit better, but favorites are still at 51% this season. For favorites, 305-293 and 7 against the spread. Meanwhile, the unders have the lead on overs, 304 unders to 295 overs. I'm doing this as you've got like two or three games hanging in the balance in college basketball, but as of right now, 18 unders to 16 overs in terms of the early Sunday games, with still that Florida game pending as well. And favorites went just 12-20-2 with regards to the super duper late night Saturday games. Those are thrown in there as well. Those were the games I couldn't cover on the podcast yesterday, and additionally the games that we saw on Sunday. So that's what we're seeing trend wise in college basketball, and that's what we're all getting in this great sport. Now coming up next, but if we chat with our good friend Rob Donaldson, who does amazing work with the show/podcast Rob's Best Bets, on the flip side here on Coast to Coast with myself, Greg Peterson, now part of the Beast and Family Podcast. Are you looking to get an inside edge this college basketball season? Well, VSiN experts use CBB Analytics, the most comprehensive college basketball analytics platform in the world. See injury impact on and off data, clutch time performance metrics, first versus second half splits, and so much more. Utilize the promo code of VSiN, that is V-S-I-N, to get $30 off and find your betting edge over at CBBAnalytics.com. That is CBBAnalytics, all one word, .com. For anyone that is new to VSiN, well, I wish you a friendly hello. This is an attention to anyone that is new to VSiN because you're able to get some free stuff with our daily newsletter. It's a great way to catch up on everything that's happening in the sports betting world. It's delivered straight to your inbox every single morning. VSiN's newsletter offers picks, data, strategies for the day's betting menu, and so much more. Sign up for free today over at VSiN.com/newsletter. That's VSIN.com/newsletter, and start receiving your free newsletter tomorrow morning. That is VSIN.com/newsletter. Stay ahead of the game and bet smarter with VSiN. Back in lovely Las Vegas for Cussy Cussy with myself, Craig Eeps Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. And it's always great to be joined by this man, as we've got Rob Donaldson aboard. He does a great job with the show/podcast, Rob's Best Bets. He's over at Underdog Fantasy. He's doing a little bit of everything on the college football front, the NFL front, obviously doing an amazing job evaluating this amazing sport of college basketball. And you're able to follow him on the old Twitter/X at RobDFB altogether. And Rob, it is always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having me on, Greg. We're already 2 weeks down in the season. Like, I wanted to slow down at the same time. I wanted to speed up to those really, really fun games that we get down the stretch of this year. But man, I just can't wait to be talking ball with you today. We have a good slate on Monday, and I'm coming off a pretty good week myself on the college basketball front.
Absolutely. It's not the biggest slate that we've got on Monday, but it's a fun one. And before we dive in on that, I want to get your thoughts here, because I felt like over the weekend I saw less defense in college basketball than I have ever seen in my life, especially on Saturday. I felt like order was restored a little bit on Sunday, but what did you make out of what we saw on Saturday, where it felt like an under was an endangered species, and we were seeing teams that typically are playing like 60 to 55 slugs scoring like 90 points?
I think what we're kind of seeing here, and I think this will continue to be a trend year over year over year when we're talking about November and maybe even December as well, but because of the transfer portal, because of the new form of roster construction that's taking place with NIL, all of a sudden you have these rosters that are only bringing back 10, 13, 15% of their minutes from the previous season. And that lack of continuity and in the early goings in particular, I think lends itself to a lack of defense and a lot of just free-flowing basketball with jump shots being thrown up there and efficient scoring that kind of go hand in hand with that bad defense. And because of that, a lot of overs are hitting early. A lot of the talented teams, I also think, are hitting early, as well as the teams that kind of had that continuity. It's kind of funny when you think back even like 10 years ago, when you're looking at the November months of this sport, a lot of unders were cashing on neutral floors or in home court environments, because I think there's an element of overthinking when you have that continuity rather than just kind of this free-flowing wildcard basketball. But when every single roster is constructed similarly in the same vein, I think it's going to lend its hand to a lot of overs in these types of months.
Yep, and I do think that it's very intriguing to be taking a look at it. Have there been any adjustments that you've had to make through the first 2 weeks of the season? Because I'm sure that you, much like myself, have had to shade up your totals a little bit, but I do think that it's been very interesting to look at some of these teams that have the former NBA guys coming up, because it feels like the overs have been completely rampant in their sort of games, and it feels like with those NBA guys that have come up, it's been hit or miss, I think is the best way of putting it with regards to the actual size.
Yeah, and I think even kind of going hand in hand with that, when you're talking about the coaches that have a style of, hey, let's push the pedal to the floor and let's score points, those coaches, I think, are more accommodating to the style of talent that they're bringing in through the portal, rather than, say, you know, some of these traditional coaches that maybe have a heavy defensive style or a very, very balanced style that over the coming weeks are going to get better and better and better. And that's where I think we can't really, I guess, get too crazy about reactions in the early goings. Yes, these games are happening. Yes, there are some teams who are 0-3 or 1-3 and 1-4, and they're bad news. But some of the teams in those fold as well are going to continue to actually get better and better and might end up actually being the best at the mid-major level or the best in their isolated conference. And I think the win-loss records this time of year can be so, so deceiving that honestly, just don't overreact, kind of stand pat, but take note of what you're also seeing as well.
And I am so glad that you mentioned that, because are there a few teams that you are taking a look at that maybe they don't have the greatest win-loss record, maybe there's been a little bit of question mark around them that you're still very much a believer in, and you think that maybe they've just been the victim of a bit of a bad sample size?
I think one of the teams that I backed on Friday with UAB taking on High Point.
Oh, you know, I was on that one too!
Right, and it's a perfect example of this, right? Because High Point, with a year one head coach after Alan Huss left to go to Creighton, they started off so darn hot. They put the pedal to the floor against Furman, they beat down some other teams, and they're carrying all this momentum into Birmingham, Alabama, where UAB was sitting at 1-2 under a veteran head coach in Andy Kennedy.
Alabama State.
Yes, just lost to Alabama State as like a 19.5 or 20.5 point favorite. And it's like, okay, this can't be a more lopsided affair. Well, UAB beat them down. And I think, again, you know, I was bringing up Queens last time you kind of asked me about this. Well, their next time out against Sacred Heart, when they're finally playing a team that was kind of on their comparison level, they went out there and controlled the wire-to-wire 20-point winner. And I feel like there are so many teams right now, when you're looking at a 3 or 4 game sample size, where the win-loss is not going to be reflective of who they are, even in the short term rather than the long term. And for that reason, I think there's a ton of betting value that you can extract in this time of year that a lot of people maybe just aren't really seeing.
Oh, I am right there with you. And those are some of my favorite spots, where you've got a team that looks hot for 2 or 3 games, but you've got a proven coach in Andy Kennedy that knows what the heck he's doing. And that was one where we were able to get the job done. As a man that does always get the job done is Rob Donaldson. He's joining me right here on Kessica Seeps. And one of the more intriguing games that we're going to be seeing for Monday, how about if we take a look at two tried and true coaches, but they're in new stops. It is VCU going up against NC State. As we know, Will Wade, he takes over at NC State, and his team is a double-figure favorite. This total has been all over the place. I think that the opener was more around about like a 159 or so, and now we're seeing this up to a 166.5. What do you make out of this? Because I do love the fact that NC State has been rock solid with their offense to begin the season, but going back to what Will Wade did a season ago over at McNeese, and I recognize that he's got a little bit of different talent level this season, his teams are more slow and defense-oriented, and I feel like this total may have went a little bit too far.
Yeah, and honestly, from a total standpoint, I 100% see your angle, because also I like the VCU side just kind of coupled along with that. And the big reason why I like both of those two elements in this game is, again, the short sample size of margin of victory, right? NC State, who was a very, very big hype team, just smoked 3 opponents in a row, one of them being UAB that we just talked about. And VCU on the other side is a team that, oh, well, they turned over their head coach, Ryan Odom, to Virginia this past season. They already lost to Utah State. They haven't really played anybody else outside of Utah State. I could totally see NC State blowing out VCU here, but VCU has the ability to dictate how this game is played, and I do think they have the horses. They actually get it done against the type of athletes that NC State has on the other side. And because of those big margins of victory that NC State is posting in the early goings, once again, I think this line is overinflated on the over. I think the line is overinflated on the spread, and I like taking the under. I like taking the points in this type of matchup.
I'm right there with you. I do think that this is going to be a game that lends itself to the underdog. I am in on those points as well. And VCU going very deep into the bench. And I think that this one is of intrigue as well. Out there in the Midwest, we go to the Octagon of Doom, which is always one of my favorite venue names, by the way. Kansas State taking on Tulsa. This Tulsa team just looks a little bit different. Right now, their being dog is a 13.5 to a 14.5 point underdog. I recognize that the first few years at Tulsa for Eric Conkle have been, well, I mean, to say not good would actually be polite. They've actually been really, really bad. That said, it looks like he has things back online. I still believe him as a coach. I don't believe in Jerome Tang as a coach. Getting 14.5 here with Tulsa is something that really stands out to me.
Yeah, and I think, you know, where would this line be had Kansas State just held on to that 22-point margin against Cal in the second half the last time out? You know, would this line be all the way up to 20 points? potentially, maybe, but I think the ultimate kind of uncertainty of what this line is indicating, it's indicating Tulsa's going to be in this game inside the Octagon of Doom. And I tend to think that a game where they were beaten down Cal of 75% of it, but they let the back door in and nearly lost that game if a few breaks go against them the final minute. All of a sudden, how does Jerome Tang, who's kind of getting billed as this NIL bad time of the era coach, come out and make sure that we're riding the ship in the correct direction? Because of that element and because of a lot of weirdness with this game, it's an ultimate stay away from me. But I'll tell you this right now, I wouldn't be wanting to lay that number with Kansas State. It would be more so taking the points with Tulsa, if anything.
Yep, absolutely. I am actually very much liking this Tulsa team. They have been impressing me, so we shall see what we get there. And all of a sudden, ladies and gentlemen, Gonzaga's playing defense. Like, a lot of people, when they think Gonzaga, they think of the high octane, just absolutely gunned offense. This defense has been really good. Now, I can't get there in laying 35.5 against Southern Utah, but I mean, this total's 159.5. I know that that sounds relatively standard for a Gonzaga game, but I like the way that this team is playing on defense, and it feels like they've got more balance than what we've seen in quite a few years.
Yeah, and the issue with this game is, I mean, I think back to the Todd Simon Southern Utah teams, and had this still been the setup of Todd Simon at Southern Utah, I'd be all over this number. But I think it's a justified number based on, one, what we've seen in year three of Rob Jeter over at Southern Utah, and also just the element of Gonzaga feels like they're mission bound this year. After a lot of injuries that have taken place over the last couple seasons that have derailed some of the better hype teams of the Gonzaga era, everything is sort of a, like this squad, a really, really memorable one. And although you can take a night off like this, probably still win by 15 and then go home and feel happy about it or just move on to the next game, I think right now Gonzaga is so dialed in to the fact that they need to handle every single game to get where they want to be, which is that number one seed line, that they're going to be taking these sorts of things serious. 35.5. Probably don't want to lay that, but I wouldn't be wanting to take that number against this type of Gonzaga team right now.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. And with this Southern Utah team, I made them like a 34.5 point underdog. So I'm very much in agreement here. If I have to play it, I'm going to take the 35 just because it's a lot of points. But yeah, I still don't know how Rob Jeter got that job. I still remember when he was at UW-Milwaukee back in the day, and that was not necessarily the heyday of UW-Milwaukee, but the heyday of this podcast is getting on Rob Donaldson, who's joining me right here on Coast to Coast Hoops. And then I do think that this is going to be of intrigue as well. What do we make out of this Penn team? Ooh, they have Fran McCaffrey come in, and boy, is he implemented his system. If you're watching Penn, they're shooting over 40% from three. Offense is great, and boy, are they playing not a lick of defense whatsoever. I'm right now seeing a total of a 162. It's the Steve Donahue revenge game as Penn fired him. Somehow, someway, he goes from being fired at Penn to taking a better job over at St. Joe's within the same city. I have no idea how that happens, but this should be a lot of fun, and personally, I'm banking on some points here.
Yeah, and honestly, I think Penn is going to be live in this ball game, because you want to talk about a program that is year to year 180 from being very, very good, being very, very competitive. One of my favorite mid-majors to back last season was St. Joe's, and then everybody left the ship in terms of their roster, their coaching staff left, and now they are a very shaky-looking team in the early goings of this season. And yeah, Penn has looked kind of bad. Well, at least they looked a little bit shaky against Providence. I will say the second half, they were within single digits for a good portion of it, and then it just kind of, you know, bloated at the back end of the game, the way that that sort of athleticism factor comes into play against a lot of these types of teams. But Michael Zanoni, if you don't know this name at the mid-major level, this is probably one of those Ivy League scores that you're going to eventually know, because he puts up buckets. And 5.5 points, it's the ultimate backdoor line in a game like this. And although St. Joe's last year would have covered this line going away, in my opinion, I think Penn this year in an in-city rivalry matchup is going to have a chance to win this thing outright. And that 5.5 point buffer is just the cherry on top.
Yep, and I think that this is going to be a really, really fun game, to say the least. I always love those Philly 5 matchups, and when it comes to a team like Penn, who's shooting over 42% from three, how do you handle them? Because going back to that Tulsa versus Kansas State game, a little bit of a reason why I'm fading Kansas State in this spot is that they're shooting over 54% from three, and I don't care if you're the peak Golden State Warriors, nobody shoots 54% from three-point range for an entire season, and then we see some of these teams come out as cold as an igloo from three, and I think this time of year is something that it's very much worth monitoring and watching, because I feel like this can turn on its head very quickly, and those numbers through like a 3 or 4 game sample size easily get warped by a few hot or cold shooting performances.
100%, and we've seen that from Fran McCaffrey over the years, where although the offense is always beautiful, it's free-flowing basketball, a lot of jumpers being taken, a lot of confident shots being taken early in the shot clock, we've seen these kind of scoring droughts that come from those Iowa teams in years past. And what I will say, kind of an interesting dynamic this year with him being the coach of Penn and them sort of being that bottom feeder team over the last couple of years in the Ivy, is all of a sudden, hey, you have this sort of this Big Ten style that put up points in a tough conference like the Big Ten. What does that offense look like with so inferior athletes, but at a much inferior league level night in, night out? Obviously, St. Joe's is part of the A-10, but right now, they're kind of the bottom feeders in the A-10 if I had to gauge them or judge them based on their early season performance. And I do feel like, although the season-long arch may not support Penn, you know, I'm sporting this 50% three-point range for percentage, I do think to some extent, it's still going to be within that range, and on a game-to-game level, they can 100% match it, in my opinion.
Oh, and you know with Penn that they are going to gut it, and you know with Penn that they're not going to play a lot of defense. That's something that we have seen a lot of from Fran McCaffrey, so that is very tried and true right there, and I think that this one is going to be interesting as well, because we have seen this Oregon team not be impressive thus far. They're laying between 12 and 13 and a half points for the Civil War out there on the hardwood between they and Oregon State. Total's 144 to 144 and a half. I'm not sure how you look at this, but Oregon has really underwhelmed me this year. This is a big giant rivalry matchup. You've got an Oregon State team that plays as slow as all heck. This feels like a really good spot for the underdog and the under.
Well, you know, I'm actually going to be going against you on this one, because I really do love the Oregon Ducks on that perception line basis, because to your point, there's a good chance that they lose to Hawaii on the opening night, and then they struggled against Rice. And in both of those games, they didn't have their leading scorer, Shellstad, on the floor. That's something to account for. And even last time out, when he returned against South Dakota State, you know, he played well, but you could tell that he was still hampering and kind of getting back into the swing of things. Well, here in game two, being back in the lineup against Oregon State, I do feel like this offense is going to be much, much improved. Obviously, we just talked about it in the early goings. A lot of these teams are figuring it out. Luckily for Oregon, they dodged the bullet of actually hanging a loss on that record while they were figuring it out. And I think with a coach like Dana Altman, as the season goes on, that team is just going to get better and better and better. And I do feel like we're getting a little bit of a discount here, even on Oregon, because if you watch that Oregon State North Texas game last time out, oh my goodness, Oregon State was down like 12 points with 3 minutes to go. They made a miraculous comeback, won that game in regulation, but I do feel like three straight games against North Dakota State, UIC, North Texas, all being those kind of low-scoring differentiators, I feel like Oregon State's eventually going to get got, and in this matchup, I think they end up getting got.
And I think that it's going to be a lot of fun to watch that interstate rivalry. I remember I used to work for the official flagship station of the Oregon Ducks, so I know this one very, very well. It's going to be a lot of fun. And Rob, we've got ourselves not necessarily the biggest slate of college basketball on Monday, but we've got a good one. Anything else that's really standing out to you?
And when you're looking at this slate here on Monday, I think one of the games that really stands out to me, and again, this is kind of a perception type of bet, but when you're looking at Pittsburgh taking on Bucknell, although a lot of people are going to be wanting to take that sort of coming off of a loss type angle with Pittsburgh side, laying a number like a 16 that is currently out there, a pretty modest number, I'm actually going to be on the other side. I'm going to be taking Bucknell, because when you look at this Bucknell squad, I'm actually a big fan of it. I think on the terms of the entire season, they're going to be one of the teams that I end up finding myself aligned with a lot, because John Griffin's bunch, I think, is going to have a really good chance to win the Patriot League. And because they have a 2-2 record out the gate with two reasonably kind of charged losses against Princeton on the road and against Hofstra, a lot of people might be discounting how good they actually are. And again, that's kind of where I want to buy back in. So go ahead and give me the Bucknell Bison here, catching the 16 points. It's one of my favorite bets on the Monday board.
The Bracket Bustin' Bison. You may recall when they made that run in the 2005 NCAA tournament and knocked off Kansas, they actually won on the road at Pittsburgh. John Griffin was a freshman on that team. So I've got a lot of really, really bad Bucknell knowledge, by the way. I was a big fan of them when I was in middle school and high school, so I actually remember that very well. They have welcomed them back into the Peterson Event Center. We will see how that goes. And Rob, I know that you're doing an incredible job taking a look at this great game of college basketball. Let the good people at home know it's all on tap for you and how people can follow along on social media and other platforms.
Well, hey, Greg, it's always a blast talking ball with you, my man. And for those who want to follow my bets Monday through Friday, those will be up on my YouTube channel at Rob Donaldson. And then on the weekend, Saturday, Sunday slates, those will be on my Twitter at RobDFB. But as always, Greg, I appreciate having you on, my man.
It is always great to be able to get Rob aboard. He sets me up for nerdy Bucknell factoids and everything like that. And he does a great job of valuing the sport every single time he joins me. Learned such great insights and did so once again today. So big thanks to Rob for joining me on Coast to Coast Hoops, now part of the Beeson Family Podcast. And coming up next, it is that time of the podcast. They give you picks and analysis and every game on the betting board for this college basketball Monday as we some thanks. Las Vegas for Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Hoops Peterson, now part of the VSIN Family Podcast. Always great to be joined by Rob Donaldson. He does a tremendous job with the show/podcast Rob's Best Bets. Every single time he joins me, learns such amazing insights. He did so once again today. So a big thanks to Rob for joining me in the last segment. Now it is that time of the podcast to give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this college basketball Monday as we hit some bank shots.
Most financial establishments close at a certain time, but not here. It is time for a side and total on every game on today's betting board bank shots.
Do note that as per usual, any changes that are made to these plays will be listed up on my Twitter/X feed at gunit_81. And we are going to be going in Las Vegas rotation order. This is where we go with the games involving the bigger conferences first, and then teams that are in the small conferences, they get listed at the bottom. These are the extra games, and these involve teams from these conferences: the SWAC, the MEAC, the Atlantic Sun, the America East, the NEC, the Patriot League, the Big South. If I have not said so already, I don't know if I said the MEAC, but the MEAC is in there. If I didn't say the NEC, I probably said the NEC like two times, but there you go. So those are the conferences that are listed at the bottom, and let's get things started with 801, 802 on the card. St. Joe's hopes to not be average Joe's as they're on the road for a Philly 5 matchup against Penn. The Quakers of Penn are a 5.5-point home underdog. Turn on this game between a 160.5 and a 162. And I said my total here at a 170.5. I'm looking at the over. This is a Fran McCaffrey coach team, and boy, does it look every bit like it. This Penn team is right now shooting over 42% from three, and they're 330th in the country in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis. So, yeah, he very much has taken his style over there against a team that is going to be coached by Steve Donahue, who was the coach last year over at Penn. So good, clean family fun right there. When you take a look at this Penn team, I think that the big thing is getting TJ Power going. This is a former top 30 recruit that just could not find his footing over at Duke of Virginia. He's now been able to fly the team with about 10.5 points per contest, has actually been one of their better rebounders, and you know, bring back a thrower, Cam Thrower from a season ago where he was giving the team 5 points. He shot in the low 30s from three, but he's one of the main holdovers, and he's been able to elevate. And then Ethan Roberts has really been your main man, a guy that a season ago was giving this team 17 points, shot 37% from three. He's now giving you 20.5 points per contest. Very clear that Penn is looking to sell out to be able to get really good 3-point shots. They've been able to generate a few turnovers as well, but this team is gunning it, top 50 team in the country in terms of total possessions per game. And St. Joe's more of a mid-tempo team. That's exactly how Mr. Donahue was running Penn last season. For St. Joe's, though, the defense has not been great. 187th in the country in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis, but the deuce is loose. Deuce Jones, who comes over from LaSalle, has been able to supply 15 points. Got some nice pieces in the backcourt. Derek Simpson, who began his career at Rutgers, Buckers has been able to give you 9 points, few rebounds, and I do think that St. Joseph's right now shooting 23.9% from 3-point range. That should see a little bit of positivity. Do I think they could leave a little bit of something to be desired from 3-point range? Yes, but quite literally everyone other than Khalif Myers, who has went 1 of 3 from 3, that has attempted at least 1 3, is shooting under 30% from 3-point range, aside from DeSharr Haskins as well. He's been shooting 33% from 3, but just everyone's been cold. This should be lifting up, and I do think that for St. Joe's, they do a nice job down low. Justice Ajabaro was going to be giving you multiple blocks per contest. You bring back Anthony Finkley as well. He last year was a part-time starter, 7 points, 4 boards. He actually shot 40% from 3-point range last year, so I do think that 3-point shooting gets back online against a Penn team that's giving up all sorts of points, and I think that you get a nice high-scoring expose. Set my total at 170.5. I like the over, and with St. Joe's, because they do have what they have inside, I set them as a 6.5-point favorite. Won't lay up to 6 with them. You've got 803, 804 on the card. The Drake is on the road against College of Charleston. Charleston is a 5.5-point favorite. Charleston game between 148 to 151.5, and I said Charleston is just a 3.5-point favorite. I'm going to be willing to take the points with Drake. Main reason why is this Charleston team just has injuries upon injuries right now, as you've got Mr. Dean, and that's actually his name. First name Mr., last name Dean. He's been dealing with a little bit of an injury. You've got Connor Hickman, who he was supposed to be a really good guard for this team. I remember 2 seasons ago when he was over at Bradley. He was giving that team 15 points, shooting like 40% from 3-point range. He's dealing with a little bit of an injury. You've been having Kobe Duggan, who was averaging over 15 points per game last season over at Campbell. He's been dealing with an injury. So it's just injuries upon injuries for this team right now. And for Drake, I recognize that things have not necessarily been the most savory for Eric Henderson in his first few games, and he's missing one of the main guys that came on over with him from South Dakota State as well, Owen Larson. But still, you've been able to have Jalen Quinn, who's come over from Loyola Chicago, supply the team with 15 points per contest. Will Goons Jr. Exacte has been able to give you about 7.5 rebounds per game, and Oku Frederico has come in. He's been able to give you some nice production down low for Charleston. They're going to have a little bit of a tough time matching up with that, because this is a Charleston team that is set up to really be bombing threes. Right now for Drake, they're only shooting 30% from three. I do think that that goes northward a little bit. Charleston is typically a top 100 team in terms of total possessions per game. And you go back to Eric Henderson's time when he was over at South Dakota State. In the latter years, they were playing a little bit slowly, but still a team that does a nice job taking care of the ball, typically very efficient on the offensive side of things. And for Charleston, because you've got so many injuries with this team, it's just very much a different looking team than what you were expecting. So now you're going to be relying a lot on someone like a Troy Machat, who's a true 7-footer. He's been able to give you about 6 rebounds per contest. Jalen Counter is one of the few guys that they were expecting to see good minutes at, has been healthy. He, from a season ago over at Middle Tennessee, was averaging 10.5 points. He shot about 30% from three, but is able to give you 3.5 assists, 4 boards per contest. He does a good job facilitating good, clean offense. And Jackson Prunty is one of the main holdovers from a season ago. He was limited due to injury last year. Guy with a little bit of upside, but I do think that for Charleston, they're still going to be looking to bomb it quite a bit from three. They have a little bit of size with Christian Reeves coming over from Clemson as well. True 7-footer that couldn't get out there on the floor for them. But I do think that for Drake, they see some positivity with their 3-point shooting, and Charleston stays true to their style. I'm willing to take 4+ here with Drake, and I'm in on the over, so I total 153.5. In a 5-8-0-6 on the card, Oakland is going to be on the road against Central Florida, and Central Florida is a double-figure favorite here of 14.5 to 15 points. 160 to 162.5 is the total, and made a total of 164. I do like the over. We saw Oakland get into a shootout about a week or so ago against Purdue, actually held within single digits in that game. I don't know if they're going to be quite duplicating that, but keep in mind, Oakland last season was actually outside the top 3 in terms of total possessions per game. I think that that was a little bit more due to the personnel that they had, and now they bring in a lot of guards from the non-D1 ranks to be able to come up. They also brought in Brody Robinson. He was a nice facilitator over at UT Arlington, 9.5 points, 4.5 assists for them, was actually a 40% 3-point shooter as well. And last year, the guys like Malcolm Christie and company that they brought in as transfers, they just didn't work out, and now they've got versatility with Isaac Garrett, who I remember he was over at Utah Valley Community College or Salt Lake City Community College, and he was doing a nice job bombing it from 3 at 6'8", lent very good versatility. He's been able to give the team that thus far this season, as an SC shot at the best from 3 thus far, but I still is giving you 15 points, 5 rebounds per contest. Zaire Wells, JucoRecruiting.com had him as a top 50 junior college transfer. Same goes for Kai Thurman. Thurman hasn't given you too much, but Wells has been able to deliver those 13 points per contest, and you've got, back from a season ago, one of your main big men in Tabaru Nevarua, who has been able to give you about 13.6 boards, and he's added a 3-point shot as well. And on the flip side, you've got a Central Florida team that they are absolutely looking to gun it. Last year, they were in the top 5 in the country in terms of total possessions per game. I thought that they might get back to more of that mid-tempo style that we saw in the earlier part of the Johnny Dawkins era, but he's just doubling down on the style with the fact that he's got a mostly guard-oriented system. Carmelo Pacheco, who shot well over 40% from three last year over at Mount St. Mary's, he's been seeing some good minutes. It's really been the Riley Kugel show. Ooh, I still remember when he was over at Florida as a freshman, his like last 10 games of the season there, he was averaging 13-plus points per contest, and sort of just bounced around. He was over at Mississippi State last year, where he was solid, but not necessarily amazing, and he's really become that go-to scorer. He's been able to give the team 18 points per contest. This is a Central Florida team that, as a whole, is currently shooting 52% from three-point range. I'm going to go out here on a limb and say that that's not going to continue, but do have a guy in Themis Folks, who over at both UW-Milwaukee and Louisiana was a good facilitator, career 5 assists per game guy. He's doing a good job, full and good clean offense for this team. It is a Central Florida team that they have a few more turnovers than what you'd expect, 15 per game, but that's mainly because they're playing at warp speed, and they've been able to hit the glass, which Michael Stillwell, coming over from UW-Milwaukee, was one of the top rebounders in all of college basketball last year. John Bull, saying 7'2", he's obviously got a little bit of versatility with that Bull family, but I do think that for Central Florida, the overall size and just the way that they've got a good facilitator and Folks helps them be able to get the job done against an Oakland team that still is a little bit hit or miss with regards to their outside shooting. I do think that things get cranked up tempo here. I set my total 164. I like the over, and a bundle of Central Florida made them a 16-point favorite. 807-808 on the card. VCU's on the road against NC State. NC State, a 10.5 to a 12-point favorite. Total on this game between a 163.5 to a 165.5. It's actually opened up at a 159, and I went a 162.5 with regards to my total. I'm going to be in on the under. Go back to when Will Wade was coaching over at McNeese last season, and that was actually very much a defense-oriented team. They were in the top 40 in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis, outside the top 275 in terms of total possessions per game. Now, just given the personnel, they're looking to crank it up tempo a little bit more. You bring in a guy like Darian Williams, who is a big part of that Texas Tech team with 15 points, quite a few boards, assists, and was doing a little bit of everything. You're going to be playing a little bit faster, and now you can play a little bit more off the ball because you bring in Trey Holloman, who over at Michigan State last year was doing a nice job flowing good clean offense, 3.5 assists, 9 points per contest, and this team is going to be a dominator down low because you have Van Allen Lubin, who comes over from North Carolina, Vanderbilt, Notre Dame, he's bounced around, but I've always liked his game at 6'8". You've been able to get good production as well of Jerry Deng, who is testing the NBA draft waters. Terrence Arsenal hasn't given the team much of anything, and as a matter of fact, has been dealing with a little bit of injury, so that's been taken into account. But Kadir Copeland at 6'6", he was actually the main facilitator over at McNeese last year. He's been doing the same this season, but I do think that VCU is going to be able to hold in there. I really like the fact that it is a tried and true style with Phil Martelli Jr. He comes over from Bryan. He has this VCU team playing much like his Bryan team did a season ago, and he's utilizing just so many of his guys in general. Brandon Jennings is one of those main holdovers from last year's VCU team. He's been able to give the team 3 assists per contest. Jadarian Tracy comes over from Oregon, where he was a nice guard for them, more of a like third fiddle sort of guy, but now he's giving you 13 points per game. Nick Lewis, star freshman, he's been able to give you 11 points per contest. Just all sorts of guys out there on the floor that are able to go bombs away from 3-point range. They might have a little bit of a tough time with the NC State size, but a 6'10 big man and Lazar Djokovic coming over from College of Charleston has been able to do a nice job in terms of being able to give this team a little bit more down low. He's got the versatility to be able to shoot threes. Doesn't necessarily shoot it well from three, but has versatility to be able to shoot it from three. I think that that keeps VCU lively in this game. In these two very, very highly touted new coaches, I set my line at 8.5. I'm going to be willing to take the points with VCU, and I did set my total here at a 162.5. VCU has always been a pretty rock solid team in terms of generating turnovers. It's a small sample size thus far this season, but they're generating over 15 turnovers per game, and NC State I think is going to be strong on defense. So like the under and the points here of VCU, 8-9, 8-10 on the card. North Dakota State plays host to Southern Illinois. Southern Illinois is a road favorite here of 2 to 3 points. So on this game, it is 151.5, and with Southern Illinois, I did set them as a 3.5-point favorite. Here at a 3, it's my max lay with them, but I'm going to be willing to lay it with Southern Illinois. Last year, they were a relatively mid-tempo team under Scott Nagy. It was year number one of him trying to implement his system. Go back to when he was over at Wright State. His teams were really good on offense, and they played absolutely no defense whatsoever, and feels like his teams are playing a little bit better on defense, but they're starting to crank up that tempo once again. They're averaging over 88 points per game. They bring in a guy that I really like in Isaiah Stafford, who he was was missing all last year over at Valparaiso, but 2 years ago, he was ahead of stake for that team. 17 points, 4 boards, 2 assists, 2.5 per contest. Not necessarily an amazing 3-point shooter. And for Southern Illinois right now as a collective, they're all shooting 28.5% from 3. They're not going to be like some tremendous 3-point shooting team, but they should be a little bit better than that. You bring back some like a Damian Mayo from a season ago, and Caron House, who was over at Jacksonville State last year, has been amazing. He's been able to supply 19.5 points, 4 assists. He last year shot in the mid-30s from 3-point. He's been able to really elevate that as well. And for North Dakota State, this is just not the same team from a season ago. You pretty much lose 3 of your top 4 scorers from a season ago. Now, you bring back Damari Wheeler Thomas, who 2 years ago was given the same 13.5 points, shooting in high 30s from 3-point. That helps out with a little bit of that sting. But that said, North Dakota State last year was a top 3 team in terms of their 3-point shooting percentage. If I'm not mistaken, they were actually number 1 in terms of road 3-point shooting percentage as well. And now, your main guy that comes back is 6'10 Noah Feddersen, who last year, 8.5 points, high 30s 3-point shooter. But you're trying to replace him with someone like a Mark High Strickland, who he was nice over at Western Michigan with 11 points, 4 boards, 0 per contest. He also shot 25% from 3-point range. That's not the North Dakota State system. Dave Smith has come on up from the 91 ranks. He's been able to give the team a little bit of pop. He fits the system a little bit better, but I mean, it feels like you've got some misfit pieces. This North Dakota State team is needing to just turn over a little bit of a new leaf, and they're doing a nice job in terms of taking care of the ball. They're making the most out of their possessions. They're generating turnovers on defense, unlike in past years. But that said, the 3-point shooting percentage is down below 30%. Should we see that rise up a little bit? Yes, but they're not the same team of a season ago, and I think that Southern Illinois is starting to get things going under Scott Nagy. I set my line at 3.5, 108 to 3 here with Southern Illinois. Made a total of 151.5. I think that we're going to be close enough for late game felling, so at a 151 or less, I'm going to be in on the over. 8-11, 8-12 on the card. Kansas State plays host to Tulsa. Tulsa is a underdog of 13.5 to 14.5 points, and tonight's game is anywhere between a 163.5, seeing as high as now a 166.5. It's open up at a 159, and it's going up and up and up. I agreed with the 159. I said my total 158.5, so I was right on par there. As for Tulsa, I do think that they're going to slow down this Kansas State team a little bit. Yes, Kansas State had that nice expose a few days ago against Cal. They were shooting well over 60% from the floor. They got a little bit sloppy when they were presented with the press, and this is a Tulsa team that I think that they're going to do a solid job with regards to their defense. Now, this is not a team that is going to be generating a ton of turnovers or anything like that, but right now, Tulsa's been a top 20 team with regards to rebound percentage. Tulsa brings back a guy that I really like down low that was able to give them about 5 to 6 rebounds per game last season in Ian Smichael, and you've been able to pair that up with David Green, who comes down over from Rhode Island, where last year he shot over 40% from 3, 12 points, 6 rebounds per game. Miles Barnstable was that top scorer over at St. Thomas. He gives this team a little bit more on offense. But then you've got Ramon Dean, who was over at Fordham. He gives you rough and tumble down low. He's able to pop it a little bit from 3-point range himself. And I think Tulsa holds in there. I set my line at 8.5. I'm going to be willing to take the points. I know that Eric Conkle has said some less than savory years to begin his tenure over at Tulsa. They've given him another year. Some programs would have just given up, but I think that they're right for giving him another year. It looks like things are rocking and rolling, and certainly with Kansas State, P.J. Hagerty has been great. 24 points, and he's averaging 50% 3-point shooting right now. He's been amazing, but they've also been turning the ball over 17 times per game, and I recognize that they played a game against Cal. The other two opponents were Bellarmine and UNC Greensboro. Like, yeah, that's not necessarily murderer's row right there. C.J. Jones, who he was a pretty solid guard for the team last season, he's like completely out of the rotation right now. They've been relying a lot on Nate Johnson, who comes on over for Akron last season, 14 points. He was able to give the team 5 boards, 3.5 assists per game, but he's not necessarily an amazing 3-point shooter. Right now, it's a Kansas State unit that's shooting 54.4% from 3. I don't care how good you are on offense. The Warriors in their prime weren't shooting 54.4% from 3-point range. This is going to be going a little bit downward. Now, I actually do think that this team is pretty rock solid with regards to their defense. They themselves are generating about 16 turnovers per game, so I did set a little bit of a lower total. I think that the shooting regression takes hold here for Kansas State. I think that Tulsa holds in there. So I'm going to line at 158.5. I like the under and anything of 9 plus here with Tulsa. 813, 814 on the card. Wisconsin plays us at SIU Edwardsville. Edwardsville is a 25.5 to a 26.5 point dog. 141.5 to 142.5 is the total, and I did set a total of 146.5. I do like the over as for Wisconsin. they've been a really efficient offense. They're a top 12 team right now in terms of points scored on a per possession basis. Gone are the days where I still remember my senior year in high school. They played against Penn State in the Big Ten tournament, and I believe that that game landed 37-33. And I'm not even kidding when I say that. Like, man, that was not great to say the least, but for Wisconsin, John Blackwell has been the main attraction along Nick Boyd. These two guys are combining for over 37 points per contest. It's a Wisconsin team that, I mean, the shooting is right now very sustainable. They're shooting 35% from three-point range, and they've just been really efficient in terms of getting the ball down low, being able to generate for themselves some second and third chances with Nolan Winter making it very, very icy for opponents. 60 points, 9.5 rebounds per game. I do think that Edwardsville holds in there. I am going to be willing to take a shot on the points, as for Edwardsville, they did have to replace really their main guy from a season ago, Rayshon Taylor. He was a Mr. Do-It-All sort of player, but that Edwardsville team last year, they were 48th in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis last year. Right now, they're in the top 25 in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis, as they retained a lot of those ancillary pieces from a season ago. A guy like a Ring Malath, who's been able to give you double figures. He's able to give you some boards. Joe Valeri, who was a pretty highly touted junior college transfer back in the day. Last year, gave the team 8 points, 6.5 rebounds per game. It's been a lot of horsepower down low for this Edwardsville team. And then you bring back 6'7" Miles Thompson, who a season ago, he popped at 44% from three, 5.5 points, 4 boards per contest. It's really been a win from within sort of style. And they found themselves a pass-first guy in Jack Champion, who he comes over after he was over at Southern Indiana. He's never really scored more than like 7 or so points per game, but he does a good job of being able to flow good, clean offense. It's an Edwardsville team that has been looking to play a little bit more slowly. And the reason why I think that they hold in there is that Wisconsin has actually done a great job generating turnovers. They're right now generating about 17 or so turnovers per game. And for Edwardsville, they themselves have been generating about 16 turnovers per game. I think both teams are going to have difficulties there. But for this Edwardsville team, they don't attempt a lot of threes. They're actually in the top 20 in the country in terms of percentage of their points that come from two-point range. And with Wisconsin, they've been much better with their perimeter defense. And I think Edwardsville pounds the ball inside to be able to hold in there. Semi-line at 20.5. Give me the points here with Edwardsville. And I'm in on the over semi-total 146.5. 8-15, 8-16 on the card. Rice, we give our order to Lane Kiffin. Go Owls. They are on the road. They're facing off against Tennessee. Tennessee is a 26.5 to a 27.5 point favorite. So on this game between 142.5 to 143.5. Give me the Owls of Rice. With Rice, this bunch has been able to do a solid job with regards to their defense ever since you saw Rob Lanier take over, who got a raw deal when he was over at SMU a few seasons ago. For this Rice team, you've got a few guards that have been in the system for multiple years. Jalen Smith went on over from SMU with their guy Lanier, and he's been able to get the team 13 points per contest. Trey Bourneau, he comes from USC Upstate. Year number two of the system, he's starting to flourish. 16.5 points, 5 rebounds per game. The big thing for Rice is limiting the turnovers. Last year, they were in the top 275 in terms of turnovers on a per possession basis to the negative with regards to that, so they were 275th or worse. That was a little bit disjointed. I don't think that they're going to continue to shoot 44.4% from three-point range, but they're clearly better with regards to that outside shooting. They bring in Dallas Hobbs, a nice starter over at Mount St. Mary's last season. Nick Anderson, he was limited to 12 games over at Prairie View last season, but that 12-game sample size saw him put in there 19 points, 5 boards, a steal per contest. I really like his overall game in the backcourt, and I do think that for Rice, they're going to have a little bit of a tough time down low because the Tennessee team just does a good job of just being able to bludgeon you on the glass, but they've been able to get 7 rebounds per game out of Jimmy Oldacoon Jr. He's come in from San Diego, and he's been able to do a nice job, give the team a little bit of rebounding. Now for Tennessee, when you got Felix Opara down low, that means that you're going to be able to win that battle down low. Last year gave the team 5-plus rebounds per game, solid shot blocker, and I love the pickup of Jalen Carey. Last season, he was over at Vanderbilt, began his career at James Madison. Last year, 8 points, 6 boards out there in the SEC. He's able to pop it a little bit from 3. Not necessarily great, but you can tell that this Tennessee offense is in a little bit of transition because they do lose to Kai Ziegler, has been in college basketball for like 500 million billion years, and now Jacoby Gillespie is the main guy running the show. We all remember him from the Cry of Five over at Maryland last season, and he's been able to give you 5.5 assists, 16 points per game, but he's turning the ball over nearly 4 times per game. That's a little bit of an issue. Nate Ament, I've heard some people try to compare him to Kevin Durant. Let's not go that far, but I mean, he's been solid, 60 points in the first 3 games of the season. At 6'10", he's able to give you a little bit of 3-point shooting as well. This is a Tennessee team that they always are a rock solid defense, and pretty much every year since Rick Barnes has been there. Top 20 in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis. But I do think that Rice does a solid job of being able to hold in there. Rice is a pretty slow and controlled team themselves. Last year, they were outside the top 250 in terms of total possessions per game. So set a little bit of a lower total here. I made mine a 141. I do like the under. And with Rice, give me the points here. I set them as a 23-point dog. 817, 818 on the card. You've got Arizona State. They play against Georgia State. Georgia State, a 19 to a 19.5-point dog. 148 to 149.5 is the total. I set Georgia State as a 14-point underdog. Give me the points. I feel like Jonas Hayes has been dogged a little bit as a coach, but I still remember when he was able to take Xavier to that NIT title, the last one that we saw over at Madison Square Garden, and he brought back quite a few guys from a season ago. Jelani Hamilton was a nice double-figure scorer from a year ago. Malachi Brown, he was giving the team some nice facilitation with 8 points, 3.5 boards, 3.5 assists, steal per contest, shot 37% from three-point range. They do have to turn over a little bit of a new leaf down low, and really not having Trey Scott III available, that has been hurting them a little bit. But the guy that has really been able to step up has been Joey Chapel. Chapel's right now supplying 8.5 rebounds, 13 points per contest, comes in as a non-Division I transfer, and he's been able to give the team an immediate shot in the arm. And for Arizona State, a spirited effort against Gonzaga. They were able to get a nice quality cover in that game, and for Arizona State, it does appear as though this team is going to be able to do a solid job down low, despite the fact that they lost Jaden Quantas in the transfer portals. They just found another dominator as a freshman, Musama Diop, who's been able to give you 14 points, 5 boards per contest. You've also got Santiago Triot, who's been a very nice treat. He comes over from San Diego, where last season, I mean, he wasn't that great. 8.5 points, 7 rebounds per game. He's not really a guy that gives you 3-point shooting or anything like that. And for Arizona, this team is going to be really built on Mo Odom, who's never really been like a dynamic scorer. Last year, when he was over at Pepperdine, he did give the team 13 points per game. But, I mean, this is a guy that just does a good job of being able to dole it out. Even at Pacific 2 years ago, gave the team 4.5 assists per contest. Last year, 7.5 assists, a fewer than 2.7 turnovers per game. And you've got Marcus Adams, who over at 6'8", he began his career over at BYU, Kansas, never got out there on the floor, but was a really nice player over at CSUN. So got a lot of weapons there, but they're still without Adante Holman, a nice double figure scorer that came in via the transfer portal. They've been dealing with a few injuries, and I believe that one of their international men of mystery, Jovan Vesic, he has yet to be cleared to be able to play. So I do think that in this circumstance, Georgia State's going to be able to hold in there. I love the fact that they bring back a lot of their backcourt play from a season ago, and this is an Arizona State team that right now they're allowing punters to shoot only 25% from three. That certainly is going to be going northward, and they have been a little bit inefficient with regards to their play inside. So I did set Arizona State as a 14-point favorite. I'm going to be willing to take the points here with Georgia State, and Arizona State appears to be looking to play a little bit more up-tempo. Georgia State under Jonas Hayes, typically in the top 100 in terms of total possessions per game, made a 156 total. I like the over. In 19-8-20 on the card, Gonzaga plays up to Southern Utah. Southern Utah is a 35.5-point underdog. 159.5 to 160 is the total, and I set my line at 34.5. So 35 is my minimum buy point on Southern Utah. The one thing Southern Utah is going to do is they're going to push you off the three-point arc. Last year, they were number one in the country in terms of the lowest percentage of opponent shots that came from three-point range. Now, they got plowed inside, but they didn't give up those threes. So good on Rob Jeter and company. And now they bring in a little bit more to be able to help out down low. You've got Isaiah Cottrell, who is a former starter over at West Virginia. Spent the last few years over at UNLV. The reason why he doesn't have good numbers is because he just dealt with so many injuries. He's a former top 100 recruit. He's been able to give the team 5 boards per contest. And Jaden Faroa, who comes on over from Holy Cross at 6'8" last season, he bombed it at 39% for 3, 7.6 rebounds per game. He's been able to give this team just a little bit of this and that. This is not going to be some Southern Utah team that lights you up from 3 either. They're right now shooting 27.4% for 3. That should go northward a little bit, but still, when Zach Bell, who was over at Jacksonville, was giving you like 9 or 10 points per game as one of your main guards, that's not necessarily a place where you want to be in. This Gonzaga team is actually much better with regards to their defense. Like last year, under the radar, they were a top 30 team in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis, but right now they're actually pounding teams into oblivion. Like, they have given up 68 points or fewer in all 4 of their games, and they played 3 power conference teams. It's not like they've been just taking on Sisters of the Poor night in, night out. They're holding down Creighton, Oklahoma, Arizona State, and you've got the duo of Brandon Huff and Graham Ike, who have been tremendous down low. They're combining to really do a nice job in terms of of providing that low post presence. EK, double-double, 18 points, 10 boards, and with Huff, he's been able to give you 13 points, 4.5 rebounds of his own. The backcourt is still in a little bit of transition as Ty and Grant Foster has just been a little bit of a gadget guy after he did a bit of everything over at Grand Canyon last few seasons. Jalen Worley has never been an amazing scorer, but is always going to give you a steal, a few rebounds, and then Mario Saint-Sapri, who comes over from Spain, he gives you some nice versatility as well. The man of steel, Steel Venters, I think we're going to see a little bit more out of him as he's coming off of injury as well. I do think that Gonzaga is going to be able to get the job done, and it's going to be a rather convincing win, but once you get to 35+, I think you're just getting to a little bit of a point of no return. I think Southern Utah does just enough to hold it within the summer, somehow line at 34.5, so 35+, we'll take those points with Southern Utah, and I'm in on the under, so my total 158.5. 821, 822 on the card. UC Santa Barbara is going to be playing us a Loyal Marymount. The Mount finds themselves as a 1 to 2.5 point underdog, and don't know this game right now, the total is off the board, but I have a total of a 148.5. 148 or less in on the over, 149 or higher the under. Very strange that we don't have a total up, but that said, with Santa Barbara, I saw that as a 6.5 point favorite. Right now, seeing the 2, 2.5 that I'm seeing, I'm going to be willing to lay the number with Santa Barbara. It does appear as though this defense has taken a little bit of a setback from a season ago, but this is an offense I think is going to be pretty darn awesome because you bring in a man in Ada Mahaney, who was the WCC Player of the Year a few seasons ago, just couldn't really find his role over at UConn last year. It just felt like that system didn't necessarily fit him, but you should be able to pair very well with Mario Little in the backcourt, a former top 75 recruit of Baylor in Utah. And I mean, he was solid at Utah last season. He saw a few starts, was able to throw in there like 5 or 6 points per contest, a little bit of facilitation. So I like what he's able to bring to the table. Now, it does appear as though this team has taken a little bit of a step back down low as they do lose someone, and Deuce Turner was a nice little bit of a sixth man. I do think that they're going to be able to get a little bit more out of Colin Smith with regards to rebounding perspective. Began his career over at Vanderbilt, has actually always been a really nice three-point shooter. A career about 40% three-point shooter last year gave the team 8.5 points per contest. And for Santa Barbara, I do think that they're going to be going a little bit more slowly than they have in their first few games against the Loyola Marymount team, that they're very much looking to prioritize generating turnovers. This Loyola Marymount team last year didn't do a lot of that under Stan Johnson, but this season, they've been generating over 15 turnovers per game, and you've got a nice backcourt with MJ Amy back for his second season 2 years ago when he was over at San Jose State before entering into the program. He was a guy that was putting in there for them about 15 points per contest, and Ronnie Brown Jr. was just a really nice gift from Virginia Tech. Saw some meaningful minutes for them last year. Was like a 4 point per game guy that shot 40% from three off the bench. He's been able to expand upon that as a 6'6", little bit of a combo player. Now, this is going to be a bunch that is not necessarily going to be gutting it, and Santa Barbara, I do feel like, is trying to be able to turn over a little bit of a new leaf, for lack of a better term. And speaking to my point about Loyola Marymount, despite the fact that they had a game against an Eastern Washington team that they do like to really push tempo, they're about 290th in the country in terms of total possessions per game. Santa Barbara was outside the top 250 with this regard last season. Right now, they're hovering right around about 293rd themselves. So they've still been playing really slowly, but they've been pretty efficient. 148 or less in on the over, 149 or higher the under. And Santa Barbara, I did think them a favorite of 6.5 points right now, seeing an initial 2.5. I'm going to be one to lay that number, and I'm going to be in on a 148 or less to the over, 149 or higher to the under. Right now, seeing that come onto the board at 147.5, we'll be willing to take that over. 823, 824 on the card. Oregon State is on the road against Oregon. Oregon is a 12.5 point favorite. 143.5 to a 144 is the total. I did sub my total here at a 139.5. I'm going to be willing to go in on the under with Oregon. They just have had a tough time with their offense outside the top 250 in terms of points scored on a per possession basis. It is big that they get Jackson Shellstead in the fold, but I mean, even in the first two games that he's been back, he played against Rice. He played that game as well against South Dakota State. He's been able to give the team 16.5 points per contest, but they still have not necessarily been that great. Even with him in there, they have much more facilitation than when they were trying to just have their hodgepodge of different guards like TK Simpkins and company try to be able to hold it down. But it's a Oregon team that I think is going to be very much built around Nate Biddle, who last year gave the team 13.5 points, 6.5 boards, a little bit over 1.5 per contest. He's got 12 blocks here in the first three games of the season, but it's an Oregon unit that just doesn't have a lot of three-point shooting. They've lost Jadeon Tracy, who decided to go on over to VCU in the offseason. KJ Evans has just never worked out as a former top 35 recruit, and this is an Oregon State team that is going to make this game a slog. They are outside the top 330 in terms of total possessions per game. Like, you look at all three of their games, they're all very close wins, but for Oregon State, they have allowed 65 73-64 points. So they've done a pretty rock solid job there. They lose their top three scorers from a season ago, but you bring back the ancillary pieces. Josiah Lake was a guy that was able to give them some nice 3-point shooting a season ago. They went the mid-major route and they brought in Des White from Missouri State, where he was a do-it-all guy with about 14 points, 2.5 assists, shot 37% from 3-point last season to hold it down in the backcourt. You don't have quite as much versatility in terms of your big men from a season ago, so you're going to need to have Ore Diaz-Graham, who comes on over from Pittsburgh, give you a little bit more. And then you've got Yaki Yak, great name. He comes in from New Mexico State. He was over there where he just didn't really find a lot of playing time 2 seasons ago. He's part of that team that, if I'm not mistaken, that was part of the team that was involved in the hazing situation. So that's not great. He's been just sort of around the block a little bit. But I do think that for Oregon State, with Wayne Tinkle doing a nice job of having his team generating turnovers. Right now, they're generating about 12 turnovers per game, which with that slower tempo, that's actually pretty solid. They themselves have turned the ball over 14 times per game. And both of these teams are actually outside the top 270 in terms of turnovers on a per possession basis on offense. And you get a sloppy slog of a game. It's an Oregon State team that's actually attempting more threes than twos. And the one thing that Oregon has been able to do a pretty rock solid job of is being able to lock down on defense. They have been a top 75 unit, serves the points a lot on a per possession basis, allowing opponents to shoot 30.5% from three. So I think you get a sloppy game. Somebody told 139.5. I like the under. Instead of Oregon as a 7.5 point favorite, I'm taking the points with the Beavs, and this will be the last game on the normal Las Vegas betting board before we do the extra games, 825-826. Cal State Bakersfield, meet for the Roadrunners, are on the road against Portland State. Portland State is 6.5 point favorite, total between 147-147.5. Hey, Portland State, a 6.5 point favorite. I'm going to be willing to lay up to 6 with them. It's just been a little bit of an up and down program the last few years for Portland State. You do lose your main facilitator from a season ago, so they're in a little bit of transition with that regard, but they do bring back that top scorer in Jalen Henderson, who last year was able to put in their 13 points per contest. This has always been a team that's been pretty solid on the glass, and they bring back Drayvon Minute, who began his career over at South Carolina. He's been able to get the team 8.5 rebounds per game. Now, he doesn't have a lot of guys around him there helping him out too much down low, so you're going to need to have Sebastian Tidor, who comes on up from the non-D1 ranks, to just be Mr. Versatile. You've over at 6'5", has been able to give this team about 14 points per contest, but they take on a Bakersfield team that just isn't a lot of transition right now, because Mike Scott, the interim coach, had to take over in like late September after the Rod Barnes situation. One of his assistants was involved in trafficking, and that just led to a whole big giant whatchamadoo with this team. Now, good news is for Bakersfield, they maintained everyone, but they're trying to stay true to that style, and their style is they don't take any threes whatsoever. This team, year in and year out, they're always in the top 15 in terms of 2-point shot rate. That's merely the percentage of your shots that you take from inside the 3-point arc. This is a team that's looking to pound it down low, despite the fact that you got a guy in CJ Hardy who's able to light you up from three. Last year, he was able to spot the team at 9.5 points per contest, shot 44% from three, and this Bakersfield team always has one, like, feature guy. It happens year in and year out. A few years ago, you were getting right in the neighborhood about, like, 20 or so points per contest out of Caleb Higgins, and nobody else was averaging more than 10 points per game. Last year was a little bit more balanced, but you saw Jamal Jones give you 19 points per game, and he transferred elsewhere, so now you're relying upon A.J. George, who 2 years ago over at Long Beach State averaged 11 points, shot in the mid-30s from three at 6'6", to be able to give you a bit of something-something. Ron Jessamy is someone that comes on over from Tennessee State. Relatively good shot blocker. He's able to pull in there some boards last year, about 6 boards, 1.3 blocks per contest, but not going to take the top off of a defense. And when it comes to this team, they really need Pierre Gesenste. He was over at Fresno State last season. He was a part of that team that, well, there was a lot of just strangeness going on in general. He didn't see a lot of minutes for them, but he's going to need to give them a little bit of post presence. And I do think that in the end, Portland State is going to be able to hold up with minute down low. I know that Portland State has always been a little bit of a rough free throw shooting team, but I do think they'd be get the job done against a Cal State Bakersfield team that I just feel like they don't even know themselves right now. But that said, I did set my total here at a 146.5, 147 plus and on the under, and I'm going to be willing to lay up to 6 here with Portland State. Now we get the extra games.
The normal betting board picks are complete, but there are some extra games today, so we go into the bonus.
306.599, 306.600. Georgia is playing against Florida A&M. Florida A&M, a 36.5 to a 37.5 point dog. 169.5 to 170.5 is the underdog. Give me the Fighting Charlie Wards. I set my line at 35, so we're going to be taking the points here with Florida A&M. Is Florida A&M going to be a team that you want to sprinkle the money line on? No, not at all. They bring in Anquan Boldin Jr., who his father, Anquan Boldin, played football over at Florida State. That's where Charlie Ward played his football and basketball as well. So you got a little bit of tie there. He's been able to give you like 6 points, four boards. This is a team that really doesn't have a lot of size down, though. You've had Micah Octave be able to give you about 8.5 rebounds per game. But Caleb Washington, one of their main holdovers from a season ago, just has not been able to find his footing. Last year, he was a very nice player for this team. Give the team like 7 points, four boards, just did a bit of something down low, and he's not found his footing with a Florida A&M team that apparently they're going to be looking to play no defense whatsoever. They're well outside the top 275 in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis. It's a team that's been gunning it. They're 19th in the country in terms of total possessions per game, and for this Georgia team, well, they are backing down for absolutely nobody whatsoever themselves. They are currently 21st in the country in terms of total possessions per game. Defense has actually been very good. They held Maryland Eastern short at 29 points earlier in the season. They're currently third in terms of overall scoring. They're averaging over 100 points per game. Now, this has been against completely outgunned competition, and yes, Florida A&M is completely outgunned competition themselves, as you've got Blue Kane in the backcourt, who's able to give you 16 points per contest. I love the pickup of Jeremiah Wilkerson. He's come in from Cal. He's been able to give you 17 points per contest, and now you've got a little bit of rough and tumble down low as Cannon Catchings. He's a 6'9" combo player that was former top 50 recruit of BYU and Purdue. Sumto Surreal, he's come in, and he's been able to give the team a lot of rebounding after he was relatively glued to the bench a season ago, and even though he doesn't score a ton, Marcus Millender has been able to do a nice job in terms of being able to facilitate this offense, a offense that's only turned the ball over 10 times per game despite playing up tempo, and they're generating themselves about 21 turnovers per game. I think Florida A&M flip fares a little bit better with regards to their offense. I do think that this total has went a little bit too high. Semi-total at a 169. This actually opened up at a 166.5, so now with the adjustment, I'm going to be in on the under, and I'm willing to take the 36-plus here of Florida A&M. 36-601, 36-602. West Georgia's on the road against Tennessee Tech. Tennessee Tech a 2.5-point favorite, and your total is 154. I just had a total of 151. I'm in on the under. West Georgia last year was in the bottom half of all of college basketball in terms of total possessions per game, and I do think that they're going to be able to remain competitive here. I set my line at 1.5, so anything of 2-plus, I'm going to be willing to take the points with our good friends the Wolves, as I think that the big key in this game, having back Sheldon Williams-Dryden. He's the best returner of pretty much either side. Last year for this West Georgia team, he was Mr. Do-It-All, 15-plus points, 6-plus boards. Not a guy that really lit you up from three, and he's added a three-point shot this season. And now you've got Chaz Lulis, who has just been going bombs away from three-point range. He's attempting like 7 threes per game. He comes in from San Diego, where he was unable to get out there on the floor last season, but through 4 games, he's averaging 13 points, 5 assists. He's done a nice job in terms of running the show, and he did bring back quite a few guys from a season ago. Colton Griffin was a nice like 8-9 point per game scorer from a year ago. You've been able to have some consistency in the backcourt. You bring in Josh Smith, who he was a really nice player over at NC Central last year. Last year, shot about 37.5% from 3, 9 points, a steal per contest, so I like the way that they're developing there. Now this is a West Georgia team that outside of Williams Dryden, who's only 6'6 himself, you really don't have a lot of size, and for Tennessee Tech, I do think that they're going to have a little bit of success down low, even though they do lose their main rebounder in Daniel Egbeniwe from a season ago. You bring in Danny Pounds along Jacob Whitehead, the pair of guys that's in 6'7 and Pounds. He has been pounding the boards as he was over at Old Dominion last year. Last year, he only was able to see a few minutes, but as a starter 2 seasons ago, gave that team like 4 rebounds per game. Not much of a scorer whatsoever. And then you've got Makai Cameron, who's really looking to be the head of the sink in the backcourt last year. He was more of a number 3 sort of third fiddle guy to the Johnsons in the backcourt. 9 points, 3 boards. Never been a great 3-point shooter in Tennessee Tech. Does take a little bit of a setback with that regard, but I do think that CJ McPherson is a little bit of an upside guy. He comes in from the non-D1 ranks, and additionally, I think that having Brandon Matu, who comes on over from Western Michigan, has never really been a great 3-point shooter, but someone that last season gave that team like 6 points. He's able to do a good job in terms of his versatility on defense. I do think that Tennessee Tech has just enough to be able to get the job done here, but going to set my lineup 1.5. So 2 plus taking the points with West Georgia, and I'm in on the under. 306-603, 306-604. Colgate is looking for a minty fresh cover as they're on the road against Siena, and the toothpaste is a 6-point underdog, and your total is 148. Give me the toothpaste. I set Colgate as a 1.5-point favorite. I like them outright on the money line. For Siena, you lose your top three players in terms of shot blocks last year. Last year, they had three players that gave you at least one block per game. They're missing all of them, and Colgate is actually averaging more points per possession, despite the fact that they had games against Illinois and Michigan State on the road this far this season. And it's a Siena team that they didn't necessarily have great three-point shooting last year. They were outside the top 225 in terms of their three-point shooting percentage. Right now, they're shooting a hearty 26.7% from three-point range. I do recognize that you bring back Gavin Doty. He was a really nice player for them last year, and he was giving that team 11 points, shot about 29% from 3-6 points per contest, and he's actually shot 50% from three. He's 3-6 from three, but he's been able to build off of that. He's done a pretty solid job down low. Do have to like the fact that you bring back Justice Schultz from his season ago. He was able to give the team 4.5 assists, about 15.5 points per contest, but his main running mate, Major Freeman, he's no longer in the program, so that hurts you a little bit, and it just feels like they're trying to figure themselves out a little bit more down low. They've been giving starts to Antonio Chandler, who he's come in at 6'6". He's been able to give you a few boards, but for Colgate, with losing Jeff Woodyard, where you need to really attack this team, it's down low, and I don't think that Siena is going to be able to do so. And Colgate, other than last year, they've always been a top 50 team with regards to their three-point shooting percentage. I think that they have restored the Aurora as Kyle Carlissimo has been in the system for quite a while. That's the son of PJ Carlissimo. He's right now supplying 9 points off 45% three-point shooting. Jalen Cox is going to be looked to be that do-it-all sort of guy. Last year, like 11 points, 4 boards, 4 assists, wasn't a great three-point shooter, but that's why you've got Sam Wright, who stands about 6'8", good versatility. Last year, 6 points on 36% three-point shooting. He looks to have really expanded his game this season. I think that Colgate, a team that always does a good job in terms of just being able to run good, efficient offense. Now, they're not getting any turnovers themselves. They're only forcing opponents into 9 turnovers per game. I think that they get the job done. Colgate's metrics are not great, but that's because they challenged themselves to begin the season against Illinois. They also played against Michigan State, held in both of those games, and I think that they get the job done here. 7-0, 151.5. I like the over and Colgate on the money line. 306-605, 306-606. LeMoyne is going to be playing against Niagara. Pick'em game slash Niagara is a 1-point favorite. Total on this game, it is 142.5, and I said LeMoyne is a 4.5-point favorite. I am going to be willing to take a shot here for Niagara. Other than when they had Harlan Obiana a few seasons ago, this team has just never been great on the glass. Last year, they got absolutely plastered there, and I think that they're going to have similar results this season. Now for Niagara, they lose pretty much all of their scoring from a season ago. They lost over 90% of their total points. Really, the lone guy that returns from a season ago is Justin Page, who's been able to do a nice job of taking ownership of the offense, 15.3 assists per contest here in the early going, and he's shot over 40% from three, but outside of him, it's a very suspect three-point shooting. You've got Justin Hawkins, who he comes on up from the non-D1 ranks. He's been able to get the team right around about 8.5 points per contest, but what you're going to be able to get out of the rest of these guys is very uncertain, as you've got a guy like Reggie Perdome, who he comes over after he was at the non-Division 1 level. He's been able to give a little bit of shiftiness, but this is a LeMoyne team that recognizes Xavier's down, but they took them to the brink on the road about a week or so ago. Trent Mascara, he's one of your main guys that returns. He's been able to supply about 15 points per contest. I love the fact that they bring in Ja'Kai Sanders, who began his career over at St. Peter's. Didn't really see a lot of minutes for them. Actually, he did see a few starts like a year or two ago, but still, he fares up very well with Amitri Moss, who he was over at North Florida to begin his career. When he was over at North Florida 2 years ago, he was a starter that gave the team 11 points. He threw in their 3 assists. Has never been an amazing three-point shooter, but for LeMoyne, they're a little bit better defensively than they have been in the past. You've got some size with Shiloh Jackson down low at 6'9", guy that comes in from Texas A&M Corpus Christi to help out a LeMoyne team that, since they came up to the D1 ranks, they've been one of the lesser rebounding teams in the country, but I think that they own the glass with Tennessee Rainwater, yes, that's his real name, being able to give you a little bit of something down low as well. So I set LeMoyne as a 4.5-point favorite. I'm going to be one to take them on this pick'em line, and I did set a total here of a 148.5. Niagara, though they play slowly, they're outside the top 3 in terms of total possessions per game. Last year, outside the top 300 in terms of points allowed per possession. So give me a shot on the over here and give me LeMoyne. 306-607, 306-608. You've got Pittsburgh playing us a Bucknell. The bracket plus and Bison are underdogs of 16.5 points. 143.5 is the total, and I made a total of 148. I do like the over. For Bucknell, last year they were actually a relatively up-tempo team for Patriot League standards, and they lose pretty much 4 of their top 5 scorers from a season ago. It's up to Roya Bajek, who he's back from a season ago. He's been able to give the team 13 points per contest to really be giving this team a bit of versatility at 6'9". Now, they do replace a very, very good big man in Noah Williamson with Amon Doris. He comes over from Germany, and he's been very good down low. At 6'11", true freshman, has been able to give the team 15 points, 5.5 rebounds per game, but you still lose a lot of just the ability likely to be able to dole it out. A lot of facilitation, a lot of shooting in general for this Bucknell team, with losing pretty much the entire backcourt from its season ago. And for Pittsburgh, I do think that this is a relatively solid bounce back spot, as you do have a Pittsburgh unit that isn't quite what they were in the backcourt a season ago. But DeMarco Miner, he was very major over at Oregon State last year. 10 points, 5 assists, 4 boards. He does a little bit of everything. And this Pittsburgh team should be able to own the glass with bringing in Papa Amadou Konté. He really didn't see a lot of minutes last season, but now he's been able to give you 7 boards per contest. Cam Corn has been able to average a double-double. Pittsburgh is probably going to be a little bit lackadaisical in terms of that 3-point shooting, but you've had Amari Weatherspoon do a solid job giving this team about 8.5 points per contest, and I do think that Pittsburgh finds a way to be able to get the job done here. I did set Pittsburgh as a favorite of 20 points. I'm going to be one late, and I'm going to be in on the over. 36-609, 36-610. West Virginia is going to be playing us at Lafayette. The Leopards find themselves as a pretty sizable underdog of 23.5 to 24 points. 134.5 is the total. Did set a total of a 136.5. I do like the over with West Virginia. This has been a rock solid defense. Currently a top 30 team in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis. You've got the Russ Hodge system coming on over from North Texas. His North Texas team last year was in the bottom 5 of the country in terms of total possessions, bringing them back outside the top 3 in this season. But Lafayette, they're a pretty slow and controlled team that they don't do a great job at generating second and third chances for themselves. They lose their big man in Justin Vanderbond from the season ago, but what I do like for them is that they've got some consistency in the backcourt. Mark Butler, Ryan Pettit are a pair of guys that have been giving you like 5-6 points per game in the system last few seasons, and Caleb Williams was one of the main guys for them a year ago. Last year, 11 points per contest, shot 34% per 3, 2.5 assists per game. He's done a nice job taking a little bit of leadership with regards to the team. And then you've got Luke Bavilqua, who's come in. He's been able to give you at 6'11", a little bit of size as well. On the flip side for West Virginia, Harlan Obiana, who's staying 7 feet tall, he should be able to win that battle down low. And then Hunter Huff, I do believe that his 3-point shooting should be in for some positive progression. As I mean, for Huff last season, he had the same thing happen at Chattanooga. First few games, he was cold from three, and then at the end of the season, he was shooting over 40% from the outside. He's led the way with about 15 points per contest. And Brenton Lorient, who followed Hodge on over from North Texas, Jasper Floyd did as well. These two guys have been rock solid. Floyd, you've been able to get out of him a little bit of everything. 5 assists, 2 steals, 4 boards, 12 points per contest. And Lorient, about 14 points, 8 rebounds. I do think that West Virginia owns the glass. I just don't know if they play at a pace that's good enough for them to be able to get the job done with regards to covering this big of a number. And right now, opponents are shooting just 26% from 3 point range against them. I think that that goes up a little bit. And West Virginia's only shooting 32% from 3, despite having a guy like a Huff, who's been a very good 3-point shooter, Trayson Eaglestaff, who comes on over for North Dakota. So I think that that rises up a little bit as well. I'm in on the over, and I'm going to be willing to take 23 plus here with Lafayette. 3-6-6-11, 3-6-6-12. Canisius is going to be on the road against High Point. High Point hopes to not be a low point as a 22.5 to a 24-point favorite. Total on this game, it is 154, and certainly I don't think that you're going to be getting a low point of a High Point loss. But that said, for Canisius, I set them as an 18.5-point underdog. I'm going to be willing to take the points for Canisius. They won a whopping 3 games last season under Jim Christian, and I recognize that they lose Paul McMillan, that 20-point-per-game score from the season ago, but I mean, spreading the wealth around might actually be a good thing for the team. They bring in Michael Evebrow, who the last 2 seasons over at Siena and Central Arkansas was about a 5-rebound-per-game guy. You've got Brian Ejonja, who he comes on over from CSUN along with Central Michigan, and he was a starter over at Central Michigan last season. He's able to give you a bit of, shall we say, pop down low. He last year about 5.5 points, 4 boards per contest at 6'9", and for Canisius, they were actually a top 75 team in terms of their 3-point shooting percentage last year, but they did everything else absolutely horribly. Miles Wilmoth is a guy that comes in from Siena. He was able to get that team a block per contest. They're leaving a little bit of something to be desired in terms of scoring, but I do think that Khalil Singleton, who began his career over at Holy Cross, career 39% 3-point shooter, he should be able to help out on that a little bit. And for High Point, they had that really good win to begin the season against Furman, but now they're coming off of a relatively rough loss against UAB. They bring in Cameron Fletcher, a former top 100 recruit. When he was a starter at Florida State like 3 years ago, he was able to give that team some good versatility at 6'8", pop it from three, give you like 10 points, 5 boards per contest. Rob Martin was that top scorer over at Southeast Missouri State. He's a good defender. That was one of the better 3-point shooting defenses in all of college basketball. And Chase Johnson, despite the fact that they had the coaching change in the offseason, he stayed with the program, and he's a one-trick pony. He shoots it from three. He's a career 39% 3-point shooter, but he's pretty darn good at it. That said, I do think that this summer getting a little bit lofty for a High Point team that they're not necessarily a team that looks to push the tempo, and with them staying in-house with regards to the way that that they went about the coaching change, they're still not playing up-tempo. They're outside the top 250 in terms of total possessions per game. This is a Canisius team that a season ago, it's not like they were necessarily running it and gunning it either. The reason why their games were high scoring is because they played absolutely no defense whatsoever. But last year, Canisius, 309th in the country in terms of total possessions per game. So makes it very interesting. You've got two low-tempo teams that are very efficient with regards to their offense. So I did set a total of 154.5. Here at the 154, like the over, and I'm going to be willing to take those points with Canisius. 3 of 6, 6-13, 3 of 6, 6-14. Louisiana Monroe plays us to Lamar. Lamar opened up a 6.5-point favorite. They're up to 9 total on this game. It is 145, and with Lamar, I only set them as 5.5-point favorite. I'm going to be willing to take the points with Louisiana Monroe. You've got Phil Cunningham, who he was the longtime coach over at Troy, taking over this program, and for Louisiana Monroe, this is probably not going to be a team that's going to be giving you a whole ton of excitement. For Louisiana Monroe, when their teams have been at their best, typically they've been a little bit more slow defense-oriented, and it looks like this is going to be a little bit of a grimier style this season, as they just don't have a ton of three-point shooting, but I do like the fact that they brought in a guy in Christian Lewis, who's been able to do a good job in terms of versatility. 13 points, 4.5 assists, 4 boards, and 6'3". He really elevates this program, and then Martavius Russell began his career over at Mississippi State, just really couldn't find minutes over there, but I like his overall upside. And for Lamar, they lose quite a bit from a season ago. Alexis Marmayoles was really good for this team, but that said, you still have a guy in Andrew Holyfield. He stands 6'10", and he's got nice versatility. Season ago, after he had come up from the junior college level, gave this team 10.5 points, 5.5 boards, a block, a steal, while shooting 38% from 3-point. So he's a Mr. Do-It-All for this team. The question that you got is with regards to facilitation, because you do have someone like a B.B. White who returns, but is right now dealing with a little bit of an injury. He has not played here in the first 4 games of this season. Jaden Gambrell is a guy that has really been able to come up, give this team 15 points per contest. I like what he brings to the table. And then Rob Lee, he's a guy that was at the non-D1 ranks last season. He's been able to do a nice job, give this team 17.5 points per contest. This team always does a good job of being able to spot those guards at the non-D1 ranks and bring them up, but that said, they don't necessarily have that one true main facilitator, and for Lamar, even though they've got some pretty good offensive numbers thus far, they've only played 2 games. One against Texas A&M San Antonio, non-Division 1 team, and then they got plowed by TCU, only scoring 65 points in that game, so it does make things very interesting here. I did set my total at 145.5. Lamar, ever since Alvin Brooks has taken over the program, it's been a little bit more of a defense-oriented coach. Right now, we're seeing that total about a 145.5, 146. At a 146 or higher, I mean, on the under, and I'm going to be willing to take those points with Monroe. 3-6, 6-15, 3-6, 16. You've got Stonehill on the road against Iowa State. Iowa State, 37.5 to 38.5 point favorites. 146.5 to 147 is the total, and with Iowa State, I could only make them a 34-point favorite. I think that they get the job done very, very easily. But this Stonehill team is not the biggest group of slouches ever. I'm willing to take the points, as they do bring back quite a bit of their backcourt from a season ago. Chaz Stinson was a nice double-figure scorer for them. Now, they aren't going to have a ton of size because the 6'7". Little bit of a two-it-all guy in Todd Brogna. He's out from 8 seasons ago. He's now playing over at Merrimack for the old Merrymen. But that said, with Sonel, they still do have a guy that's able to help out with regards to being able to facilitate in Rex Sutherland. Sutherland is a guy that began his career over at New Hampshire and just dealt with a lot of injury last season. He's only been able to give the team like 3.5 points per contest thus far, but he's been doling out 3.6 assists per game. He's been helping the team avoid turnovers, so he should be able to help out at 6'5", be a little bit of a do-it-all sort of player for the team. And then Raymond Espino Guzman, he helps out down low after he did lose Brogna. He had 6'7", 6'8", was able to give Sacred Heart like 5 rebounds per game. But the big thing that you want to be taking a look at is Herman Coffey. He's a guy that as a freshman last season for the Stonehill team was in the backcourt shooting about 37.5% from 3.5 points per contest, and he's not been able to give the team double figures. And Will Batchelor always was a rock solid 3-point shooter over at Holy Cross as well. They face off against an Iowa State team that is really good at generating turnovers year in and year out. This team, ever since TJ Otzelberger has taken over every year, they've been in the top 15 in terms of both points allowed on a per possession basis and turnovers forced on a per possession basis. And that's because you've got Tamon Lipsby, who's able to be the head of the snake. He does it all. He's been given the team 4 steals, 5.5 assists, 17 points per contest, and the overall like 3-point shooting might not necessarily be his forte, but that's why we got Milan Mimosilovic, 6'8 combo player that throughout his career over at Iowa State, shooting about 40% from 3, and the versatility of Joshua Jefferson. Stands about 6'8, 6'9, came on over from St. Mary's. He's able to give you multiple steals. He's able to give you some 3-point shooting. Last year, 13 points, 7.5 rebounds, 3 assists per game. Like, he's just such a rock solid player. That said, I do think that Sonel has just enough backcourt play to be able to hold in there, and I do think that this is going to be a mid-tempo game here. I did set my total here at a 146, so at the 147 plus, I'm going to be in on the under and the points here with Sono. 306-617, 306-618, Missouri plays us for Prairie View. Prairie View is an underdog of 37.5 points, 164 is the total, and made a total of 168.5. I do like the over. This is a Prairie View team that they love to gun it, but with this Prairie View team, they're always good in terms of generating turnovers. As a matter of fact, 5 out of the last 9 years, they have been a top-9 team in terms of turnovers forced on a per-possession basis. Now, that comes at the cost of being able to hit the boards. They're always in the bottom 20. With regards to rebound percentage, looks like they're going to be right back there, though they do bring back Marcel Bryan. Began his career over at Omaha last year, gave the team about 5 or so rebounds per game, but Prairie View, once again, back in the top 50 in terms of total possessions per game. That's where they were last year, and this is always going to be a Prairie View team that's going to be looking to gun it. And for Missouri last year, they were one of the more, shall we say, up-tempo teams in all of college basketball. They were very efficient on offense, top 5 team in terms of points scored on a per-possession basis. They've dialed it back just a skosh this year to about 173rd, mainly because they've got a little bit more size than they did a year ago. You still do have some nice pieces in the backcourt, though. Sebastian Mack and Anthony Robinson have been able to combine for about 25 points per contest, and then Jaden Stone, who was once a 20-point-per-game scorer over at Detroit, he comes over, but now you've got someone like a 6'8", Mark Mitchell, who's able to give you 20 points, 7 boards, 3.5 assists. He's been a nice stat sheet stuffer. 7-footer and Sean Phillips gives this team a real, shall we say, enforcer down low that they haven't had in the past. They've tried to be able to have a little bit more rebounding. Hasn't necessarily worked out well for Dennis Gates' system, and for Missouri, the one thing that they have been having as well, with a little bit more size, has been a little bit more sloppiness. They're shooting over 44% from 3, and Prairie View does give it up from 3-point range, but the 14 turnovers per game, that's a little bit of a concern, and I think that that'll be enough for Prairie View to remain lively. They are going to gamble for turnovers. When they don't get turnovers, they give up an easy bucket, but I think that they generate just enough to hold in there. I set my line at 32.5, so take the points here as Prairie View, 168 or less. I'm in on the over, 306-619, 306-620. Clemson plays host to North Alabama. North Alabama is an underdog of 24.5 points, 144.5 to 145.5 is the total. Set a total of 144.5, so at a 145 plus, I'm in on the under, but for Clemson, this is a team that's built mostly around their low post play. You bring in a guy like a Nick Davidson, who last season over at Nevada, 13 plus points, 7 plus rebounds per game, and North Alabama is one of the few mid-majors that can really hang in there because they bring back their guy in Cornelius Williams, who last year gave this team 9 plus rebounds per game. 4 game sample size this year, 16.5 points, 13.3 rebounds per game. He has been rock solid for them down low. Now, they've got a lot of adjustments to be made in the backcourt as they pretty much lose all of their top scorers from a season ago, like Jamari Lane and company. But that said, they get back Dallas Howell, a 6'7" combo player that 2 years ago, prior to getting injured, he was averaging 8.5 points, shot 95% of the free throw line. He was able to shoot 35% from 3-point range. He really helps out in terms of giving this team versatility at the wing spot, and they've been able to get some pretty good production out of Kevin Dekovicic, who's been able to come in after last season. He was a little bit more of an ancillary guy, was giving the team 3.5 points. Didn't shoot 53% from 3, but I think they attempted like 15 threes. But that said, he's been able to give this team some nice 3-point shooting as well. And then on the Clemson side of things, this is a team that year in and year out is outside the top 250 in terms of total possessions per game. The Brian Brunell style is always hard-nosed with regards to their defense. Took it on the chin a little bit over the weekend against Georgetown, but do think that they're going to bounce back here. Ace Buckner has been able to do a nice job in the backcourt. He's come in, he's been able to give this team 12 points per contest, and it's really been a spreading of the wealth for them. You've got pretty much 7 different guys. They're averaging over 6.5 points per contest. You don't necessarily have that one main guy, but RJ Godfrey has been able to help out with Davidson and Carter Welling in terms of being able to hit the boards. You've got pretty much 3 different guys for the team, give you over 5.5 rebounds per game, and I do think that with having Williams down low for North Alabama, that allows them to do just enough as Clemson looking to figure out things in the backcourt a little bit more. They've been very impressive in not turning the ball over, but they've also faced off against teams that they really don't press the issue on defense. So total, I said I had a 144.5, 145 plus in on the under, and I'm willing to take those points with North Alabama. And wrap things up with 306-621, 306-622. You've got Colorado, and they are going to be playing us at Alabama State. Alabama State's an underdog of 19.5 points. So on this game, between 155.5 to a 157. I set a line of 20, so 19.5 is my max lay, but I'm going to be one to lay it. Alabama State, to their credit, they get a really nice win against UAB. Now they do have to go to elevation, and they do have to face off against a bunch that I'm not necessarily bullish on this Colorado team. I'm going to be upfront with you, but Brankton Hargis is a 20-point per game scorer that comes over from UC Riverside. Elijah Malone is a guy that at 6'9", 6'10", has some versatility, and this is a new-look Alabama State team, as I mean, they lost the coach's son in TJ Madlock. He was always able to do a nice job in terms of facilitating the offense. Now they're looking at Ajon Anderson, who began his career over at Queens NC and Utah Tech, to be a little bit of a do-it-all guy, and he was solid over at Queens last year. 5 points per contest, but it's never been a three-point shooting dynamo. Alabama State's main forte last year was the fact that they were a top five team in terms of fewest turnovers on a per possession basis on offense, and through three games as far this season, they're turning the ball over more like 14 times per game. They've actually been relying a lot on their low post play to be able to hold in there, as you've had Demarion Yates along with Archun King do a nice job in providing a combined about 9 rebounds per game. Mario Andrews, who doesn't give you any scoring whatsoever, he's been able to do a nice job hauling in there the boards. And I mean, like, even go back to last year, it was a small sample size, but he was giving the team 4.5 rebounds in about 15 minutes per game, and he was averaging fewer than 2 points per contest. So you've got some rebounding specialists there, and you need to get Cam Polisi to be able to give you a little bit more as well. He comes in from Canisius. Last season, he supplied that team with 6.5 points. He was actually their lead rebounder with 5 boards, shot 40% from three. He's providing just 3.5 points per game as a starter right now for this unit, and I do think that Colorado, even though they do have their deficiencies, they do have a few freshmen that have been able to come in, give this team some nice pop, Isaiah Johnson being the main of them, giving them 18.5 points coming in from the great state of California. And I do think that with this Colorado team, they're going to continue to be able to do a nice job in terms of shooting it from three. They're shooting 38.5% from the outside. They've got good versatility. They've kept teams off the offensive board. So I do think that the scoring chances are going to be a little bit limited here. I do think that this Colorado team does cool down a little bit with that three-point shooting as well. So I've set a total of 154 in on the under, and I'm willing to lay up to 19.5 here with Colorado. And that'll wrap things up for the Monday edition of Coast to Coast Deep Sound, part of the VSIN Family Podcast. Big thanks to Rob Donaldson. Does great work with the show/podcast, Rob's Best Bets. He joined me in the last segment. If you do like hearing from this fine podcast, Coast to Coast Heaps, you're able to subscribe wherever your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, you have one of two ways to be able to fire those in. First one is my Twitter/X timeline at GUnit_E1. Keep in mind, Lars Yum, they mean does not matter. So as per usual, please do send these into the timeline. The other way is find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you're able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. I'm with you guys every single day on this podcast, give you guys picks and analysis on all these games, and I'll be back with you once again tomorrow. Thank you.